The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Pit Crew podcast. I'm Millen, and I'm joined by...
Chase.
And we are back for episode 3, and we have a lot to cover today. We had two back-to-back weeks of very good racing with Australia and China. So we're going to be diving into kind of major key moments that happened in the race and sort of looking at a retrospective of how we think the actual racing went and looked like just from a regulations perspective, and maybe updating our opinions that we so strongly had during episodes 1 and 2 about where the season was going to go, and kind of looking back on what did we get right, what were we wrong about.
Yeah.
And so, Chase, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I was so happy watching that first Australia race. Like, really, like, just life is better when Formula One is going on.
I love it because it's like, it's something to look forward to on the weekends because I get excited about it during the week.
Yeah.
So when a Monday on a race week hits, it's like, oh, I cannot
it's
wait.
Race week.
I can't even wait for like FP1.
Yeah.
Like I'm so excited to just see when I reload Instagram,
just
timings
the
come
race
up.
Days and
it fills me up with so much excitement. So, but let's get right into Australia. First off, we have Max Verstappen's big crash in
Q1
due to what is being reported as a technical error. Apparently the computer system in the cars, which is basically giving you your data and essentially is telling you when to apply throttle and when to ease off and differential, like it's all a computer system now. So apparently the car had just delivered extra throttle before Max was anticipating it and just hit the wall, crashed out. So he started from all the way down in P20, I think it was.
Yeah.
But for the actual race, I think he bumped up because...
He did come up quite a bit in the race. I think he finished...
He started, I think, a little ahead because some people started from the pit lane, and then he finished...
Finished sixth.
Okay, so yeah, strong showing.
Very strong race.
So that was kind of the first major incident that we had in quali. And then 30 minutes before the actual Grand Prix started, the hometown hero, my favorite driver, Oscar Piastri.
P81.
The car took more throttle on a curb than it should and binned it right into
the barriers.
Right into the barriers. Bummed for him. Next up for Australia, kind of right from the offset, we saw the sandbags came off for Mercedes.
For Mercedes. That was like... I was honestly really surprised, like, right from the start, because they qualified 1-2, no?
Yeah, yeah.
I was taken aback. Like, I was not expecting that much of a...
Oh, man, I think the gap was, like, 8-tenths to a second from second to third.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is usual with new regulations, but it's always surprising to see a gap from both cars that was that large. Because I think Russell put quite a bit of
I think he still put like 3-tenths on Antonelli.
Which is, you know, that comes with experience, of course, but still, from second to third,
I mean,
almost a second is
ridiculous.
Especially with, I think the scariest part was how strong Ferrari looked.
Yeah.
Like the gap between Ferrari and McLaren, which I'd say are probably the third fastest right now, for sure, is... In Australia, between Norris and Leclerc, or Norris and Hamilton, was 30 seconds. Norris was 30 seconds off the pace of Ferrari. So to see in quali just how much of a gap there is between Ferrari, Mercedes, and then McLaren to Ferrari, there's huge chunks. So I think Mercedes is in a league of their own. Ferrari is basically the guaranteed third place, second row right now. And it's really just a fight between third and then 22nd, essentially, for places. But
which is like bringing me back to like pre-2021 with that Mercedes domination, where it would be like Lewis and Russell or Lewis and Bottas.
Yeah.
And they're just
like 30 seconds clear of everybody else by like the end of the race. Yeah. So crazy work done by Mercedes there. And on the opposite end of that, from the sandbagging, we had Aston Martin doing what we've now deemed airbagging.
Airbagging.
Which is not even, like, having difficulty. We talked about the nerve damage situation where they could not do more than 15 or so laps. I think Alonso said 25 or something.
Yeah.
They ended up doing.
It was weird. It was 15 for Stroll and 25 for Alonso. But Alonso retired on lap 15.
Oh.
And then Stroll made it all the way to lap 37. But then both the drivers, so like they re-entered the drivers to gather data during the race. And they're like 10, 12.
15 laps behind.
Yeah. Like to me, that was a little ridiculous.
I've kind of never seen that. Yeah.
Because it seems weird because normally like that's, obviously what the practice sessions are for.
Right.
And even the qualifying sessions, but the race to send your cars back out, I mean, I guess it makes sense because you're still putting it under like the full load conditions where it needs to perform and you're getting valuable data.
For sure.
But it just seems weird that they're in testing conditions while everyone else is
ready
racing.
To go. But to choose the race as the moment where you want to gather data where incidents can happen, there are active battles going on. Like it doesn't seem like the most opportune time to go out and say, hey, let's get some information.
And I wonder like if something were to have happened with the cars on track and like obviously everyone knows, FIA knows they enter to gather data. There would be no other reason for sending the cars back out. If something were to happen, what the repercussions would have been.
Oh,
like I wonder if like they'll implement something to limit people from sending the car on track just for testing purposes.
Two laps minimum. Like if you fall down two laps, you can't go back out.
Two laps, you can't send the car back out.
Yeah. Beyond that, we also have one of the big on-track moments was that stood out to us was Leclerc versus Russell because Leclerc said something over the radio that we wanted to highlight and we felt was important to address. I think you have the full quote, right? Do you want to read that out?
It's not the full quote, but basically the summary
notes,
of it was in the driver briefing or the driver meeting before the race, they had talked about people on the long straight, so kind of the back straight on the track in Australia, and also like midway through sector two,
right?
Not staying so close to the car in front of you.
Just because of the
battery. So like the cars, obviously, depending on how they're driving, there's going to be a slight offset in how much battery they have in reserve. So if the person in front of you runs out of battery and they like it slows down drastically.
Yeah, because you have to remember then, it's like, 50% of the energy delivery
is
from
the battery.
Yeah.
So when you lose that, like you're losing speed super quick. And if you're like 1/10 from the back of their car, like you got to react quickly to go around them. And it caused Leclerc to have to evade a potential incident.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was behind Russell and I guess Russell ran out of
battery. Yeah, you had quite a few radio messages from Charles in that race complaining about how other people were engaging him.
Yeah.
I know he complained on the radio a few times about Hamilton, you know, racing him a little hard, which I agree on the Russell thing, especially if it's, you know, something you agreed to. He then complained from... He did an interview where he was complaining about how hard Hamilton was pushing him. And he was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that from like a teammate. I thought things would go over smoothly. And it's like, well, you know, and a similar thing happened in China with Liam and Arvid, where it's like you can't expect your teammate to go easy on you just because you're teammates. Right.
Yeah.
If
Lewis can push it harder,
if it's
he's
an equal opportunity, you gotta push. It's whoever wants it more. Right. So you can't fault your teammate for going a little harder than you. And I know a lot of people were complaining like, oh, while Hamilton was putting pressure on George, Leclerc was kind of just waiting on the back foot for them to have less of a tire offset. So for Hamilton's tires to degrade so he can scoot right up into third. And so there was a whole discourse about how the drivers went racing. I guess that's just something we're going to have to see evolve and sort of what rules do they establish within themselves outside of what their driver, like the FIA parameters are. Until something is done about it from an FIA perspective, right now all it is just, hey, please
like,
be nice.
Be mindful.
Be mindful. But there's no penalty or
they
rules
can't be
you
penalized
can enforce.
For not doing that.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, but so Australia, I know we said we had skepticisms about the regulations, but what I'll say is the racing looked incredible.
Oh.
Like
probably
genuinely the most excitement
I
felt watching a Formula One race in
a long time. Like, there were highlights from last season or the season before. Like, Singapore two seasons ago was phenomenal with Sainz and Norris. Last year, like, Vegas was super interesting because of the environment and how cold it was. In terms of, like, straight racing through the whole race.
Yeah. Because you always find that the last set of regulations towards the end, especially when all the cars got a little bit more closer together in terms of performance, that you would have a lot of, you know, action. There was a lot of dramatic moments from the offset, from the beginning, and then it would kind of die down. And as soon as the tires started to play a factor, you would get these big gaps. The only way to jump up a place, and sometimes it wasn't even like from the beginning of the race you would have action. Sometimes the only chances to overtake was from the pit lane.
Yeah.
So
pit lane or under a safety car, like that would, everyone would pray for a safety car because after 10, 15 laps and those gaps are built up, there's no
way to shrink them down. Yeah.
To shrink those gaps.
Unless you put on a soft tire and kind of just started ripping quali laps, but you can only do that over like 8 laps.
And then you have to pit again and then you're losing 24, 25 seconds there.
But, and the other thing was like a few years ago or like over these past couple of years, the excitement came from, you know, defense, not necessarily overtakes, watching people have to defend and cut off potential overtakes that we probably weren't going to see. Now it's just constant back and forth throughout the entire stretch of the track length, which I think is super exciting, engaging, and it's great for the entertainment side of the sport. And I think if we go right into China, let's first talk about the elephant in the room as two huge McLaren fans. The disappointment
after qualifying.
We heard slightly before the race during the while the teams were on the grid and, you know, Sky Sports and F1 TV send their interviewers and their reporters down Martin Brundle onto the track to talk to the drivers and the engineers. We heard that Lando Norris was having a power unit issue and would not be participating in the race. And very funny. They went up to Oscar to interview him, and they were like, so-and-so, something terrible happened to your teammate's car. How does that affect you going into this race? And Oscar said, yeah, it's tough, it's brutal, but it has nothing to do with me, and I'm just going to race the best race I can. And then they didn't address it after, like, up until the start of the race, you were like, okay, so Oscar's still racing.
Yeah.
But then when they do the on F1 TV, where they do the graphic where it shows the grid, it got to Oscar and Lando. There were no numbers on either of them. And Alex Jack, who does the commentary, was like, and Oscar Piastri will also not be participating in the Grand Prix. And I was like, what?
What are we talking
What happened
about?
In just the 5 minutes where he just said he was fine and he's going to do the best race he can? So
I guarantee right after Oscar said that to the press, and then he turns around, goes to the garage, and talks to the mechanics, and they're like, you're not racing either.
Buddy. They were in the garage, and they were like, does he know?
Does he know? How are we going to tell him? Well, I'm going to hold your hand
hand when I say this. It's the over-the-shoulder.
It affects you because you're also not racing.
But the crazy part was we heard after that it was separate power unit
issues.
They
weren't
not the same
issue. It was
so. I think McLaren, because we researched this before we started rolling, we searched it, and there isn't like a definitive answer on what specifically went wrong with the car. We've heard it's a electrical malfunction with the power unit, but separate ones, which is interesting, right? So we've seen so far with how many DNSs, DNFs, and just malfunctions we've had with retirements, how much this huge reliance on battery is starting to play an effect on teams. And it's very shocking to see it have such an effect on one of the big four.
Exactly.
And previous constructors' championship winners 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So hopefully they can get their footing back because I don't know if you saw the graphic, but McLaren in 2026 has completed fewer laps than Aston Martin. Which is really shocking.
Aston Martin's still been able to send both cars out for the races.
And I think they both finished China.
In China.
So they finished their laps. I don't think they did exceptionally well.
Yeah.
But they, hey, They've completed more laps.
Because in Australia, it was just Norris out there.
Yeah, and in China,
and that's all the race laps that they have.
Race laps, because I think
they
Oscar
still have
did
practice
the,
in quali.
The sprint too.
In the sprint, yeah,
which
yeah.
happened, which they both competed in. But I think just looking at the race, yeah. So hopefully, Japan this weekend, we get to see Oscar start a race. We get to see both McLaren sent out.
Yeah.
Fine conditions, but fingers crossed. Hope for the best. The next thing we had was, I think, the most entertaining part of the race for sure. And kind of the big talking point people are addressing when giving props to these new regulations for how good the racing is was Leclerc versus Hamilton. Although it wasn't for the entire duration of the race, because there were moments where one would box and then the other would box later on and there was a bit of a gap, but that gap would always close and then there was always like a good 10-15 laps straight of just
a
constant
battle.
Back and forth yeah. between them. I'm talking like multiple overtakes within a singular lap. And great defense too, like very close. And I will give them props for how clean they were keeping it. You know, we mentioned how Leclerc was complaining in Australia about how, you know,
Hamilton was still
and how much he was pushing him. But then you hear him call on the radio during China and be like, you know, okay, that was actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, props to the Ferrari drivers for how well they drove. I mean, Lewis Hamilton, is he back? Do you think it's a little premature to say that Lewis Hamilton is back?
I think it's a little premature, especially considering, like you said, in China, how they were battling so close.
Yeah.
How a 7-time world champion should be 8, but 7-time world champion Oof. Is battling with a 0-time world champion.
Yeah.
And how that there's still like a competition between the two.
Right.
Where if he was fully back in his prime and whatnot.
Yeah.
He would be
leading. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's a good point where it's like Hamilton is putting up a fight, and I think the hungry, the confident mentality version of Hamilton
is
that we know is back. But in terms of an actual like dexterity behind the wheel,
yeah.
his skill, and I think part of that is just an age offset.
Yeah.
But
guy's in his 40s.
But hey, he still put up a good fight against Charles, who is, you could argue, still in the prime of his career.
Yeah.
So the argument is to be made, maybe not prime Hamilton is back, but a competitive version of Hamilton is absolutely
yeah.
back. And I think part of that is just he's having a much more agreeable time with these cars and these regulations compared to, like, no ground effect, smaller bodies.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I think, something
and like
he's
last
a little bit
year,
more...
he was, like, so miserable with
oh,
the car.
Yeah.
Like, every time in the media
pen yeah
in the pen and stuff where they're like, oh, how was it out there driving with the new upgrades from Maranello or whatever, and
what upgrades do you know
it's
something I don't
same.
Did you see the clip where I can't remember where it was, but he was like, any positives going into tomorrow, and he's like,
nope,
the weather's nice. It's nice outside, it's a good day. But yeah, night and day difference from
yeah.
last year and this year, which I, as a fan, I'm so happy to see.
Yeah,
it's nice to see
when they're actually talking about like the
yeah
the sport, the driving, rather than like, oh, the car is
bogus,
terrible,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and this and that.
Yeah, because he's such like a household name in the sport. It's almost like the weight that he carries, you expect to say good things after
yeah.
you invoke his name. It was such a bummer to be like, yeah, Lewis Hamilton out in Q2.
Yeah,
like that was brutal. But now, you know, being able to fight for podiums and, you know, maybe with luck, a win this season. So happy to see that Lewis is back and performing.
Speaking of podium. Look at that podium.
Look at that podium
in China. Russell, Hamilton, and Kimi.
Yeah. Not in that order.
Sorry.
But Kimi made him win in Formula One. I will say it made me a little sad as somebody that's older than him, watching someone that's 2 years
younger than me
accomplish something that not many people in the world have done.
Yeah.
There was a lot of conversation around the race starts. People were like, oh, yeah, he's been botching the starts. Russell's
yeah.
probably going to take him. But he put his foot down, and he held quite strong. And I think the Ferraris even got ahead of him to start the race, or maybe just won. But he put his foot down. He
came back.
Kept it together, and he took the place back, and he, you know, was able to defend it right until the end of the race. He built in quite a gap, too. Yeah, I think he finished, like, 8 or so seconds ahead of Russell still,
yeah.
which is quite impressive for how
especially
young he is.
Especially within the team. Like, that's just
yeah.
a difference in real... Well, And especially with Russell having more experience, too. Right. Like, if we're considering the cars at equal performance, relatively, then, like, that was a
Russell
really good performance.
Like, he got, obviously, like, bogged down just having to deal with Charles and Lewis going at it. But, obviously, once he clears them, you expect someone with his experience and his wherewithal to kind of close that gap.
Yeah, almost. Like, once they're both in clean air, like, Russell theoretically should but
get right to him. But no, great job from Kimi. And similarly, on the rookie side of things, Oliver Bearman, under the radar of most people, driver so far of the year, maximizing and even surpassing the performance of that Haas, if we're comparing him to Esteban Ocon, a very strong P6 in China, which is really impressive when you look at who finished ahead of him. No McLarens.
Like, and what's the highest finish for Haas in the last like,
I think
two,
that
three
might
years?
Be,
like, that might be
that might be
it or,
it,
like,
or
very
close, which is in a very new set of regulations when we're expecting some of the mid-tier to bottom-tier level teams to be quite far off the pace. Exceptionally good finish for Haas and for Ollie. And the last thing that we wanted to kind of go over was these Ferrari starts, you know, these incredible Ferrari starts. But I think the sad thing is that it's been the same repetitive circle where race starts, Ferrari gets ahead by lap one, they fight, Mercedes overtakes, Mercedes 1-2.
Yeah.
And my kind of question to you is, one, how long do you think this advantage of having such strong starts is going to last? And two, what are the odds of Ferrari doing something to then minimize the race pace gap and kind of keep those advantageous starts and do something about it to go on to win races or even get second place?
See, the thing is, I think for sure that's going to be something that they're working on with the car to make sure that the race pace can still kind of keep up there, even surpass Mercedes.
Right.
But then you also have to look at it from the Mercedes point of view. Are they, they're going to be working to get the starts
those better
like Ferrari.
Starts. Yeah, for sure. And I think midway through the season, we're getting new kind of rules and permissions about engine procedures and regulations. So people have been speculating that there is going to be a drop off in quality for Mercedes and the sort of advantage they have right now. That's impossible to predict, but it's important to recognize. And I think the last bit that we should cover is this recent report that Mercedes has an illegal front and rear wing. Have you heard about this?
I did not hear about this. This
so,
is news to me.
So apparently the regulations stipulate that your front and rear wing, the active aero, has to close within 400 milliseconds of each other or within the active aero zone ending. And I think Mercedes is currently at double that right now. So they're at 800 milliseconds to close the active aero. So people are debating whether or not, one, that's going to call for some kind of disqualification from China retroactively, or if there's going to be some kind of penalty or they're going to be forced to change that coming into Japan, and how much of an advantage is that going to give Ferrari for this race? Which probably not a lot, simply because it's just going into corners, which Ferrari is kind of already, they already have the advantage on. It's where
it's the straights where
Mercedes is pulling away, but everything helps. That just about covers the first two races of the year and concludes our first season of the Pit Crew podcast. Yeah. We'll probably pick this up sometime in the fall of next year. We're going to have a lot to cover over the summer, a lot to go over going into sort of the conclusion of the season. So stay tuned for that.
And also some just overall format changes. This was an excellent period to kind of see what we could do with Formula One. And obviously it just starting out, it was a lot of kind of hypothetical, like what we wanted to plan and see, but now that it's actually started, we can kind of see
what
it takes.
We can kind of divulge into more detailed and sort of not so much speculative, but actual like quantitative information and discussion. So look forward to that. Thank you so much for listening.
I'm Chase.
And I'm Millen. This has been the Pit Crew Podcast. We will see you guys next semester.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.